Good morning, members. Elena would like to bring the Environment, Natural Resources, and Policy Finance Committee to order. Today is a special day. Today is Elena's sixth birthday. Elena Lynn McNamara is 6 years old. So what we're going to do when we get done, we're going to have a little party. We usually don't do that in this room, but we got a special dispensation from Munoz and staff. So we have Elena's birthday cake, and we're going to have cookies and cupcakes while we have the meeting, and then after the meeting, we have a cake, too. So there'll be a lot of pressure to get done on time today. So she reminded me that she hasn't been back here since her first birthday. Her mother told her this morning she was here on 1 year old when she was 1 year old, when then Speaker Kelleher let her go up on the big chair, but she doesn't remember that. So welcome, Representative Lencheski. Let's do your bill first, as you're here. Members, Representative Fabian, will you approve the minutes of March 12th? Any discussion?
One correction?
Yeah. Representative Fabian, if you could correct on the second page that you moved your motion to recommend 1394. It was not myself.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It should state, the second line should state Representative Fabian renewed his motion, not Representative McNamara.
Thank you. Discussion to the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are adopted. Welcome, Representative Lencheski. Glad you could be here. If you could present your bill, or I'm sorry, I'll present House File 989 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the bill later. Welcome.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chair and Elena. Happy birthday. Also, happy St. Patrick's Day. And, Mr. Chair, you're very Irish, and what you may not know is my mom's name is Patty McGraw. So I know what today is all about. So thank you so much for having me. And I understand the party is going to take place soon, so I will hurry. So, members, thanks so much for hearing this bill. It's not often you see a bill that's this short, a sentence bill, so it's pretty clear what this bill is about. Black Dog Lake, members, is a lake within the channel of the Minnesota River Valley. It abuts my district, and a number of constituents of mine for a number of years have had concerns about water quality coming out of Black Dog Lake into the Minnesota River Valley. So this bill is just asking the MPCA to do some testing of the water quality there and make that information public. I talked with both the MPCA yesterday and Xcel about concerns they had related to access to the facility, and I think I understand some of the concerns there, and I want to go forward and work with them before you put your bill together, Mr. Chair, to see if we can't accommodate all concerns. And so with that, that's pretty much the bill. I have one testifier, Mr. Chair, who's a constituent of mine and a neighbor of mine and a community leader, somebody who's really worked hard in the city of Bloomington and the region to address issues of water quality. And if you would permit him, Mr. Chair, I would hope Mr. John Crampton could have a few minutes to talk about the bill.
Well, thank you, Representative Lencheski, and welcome. If you could identify yourself for the record and go ahead and give us your testimony.
My name is John Crampton, and I am a resident of Bloomington. I'm the president of the Bush Lake chapter of the Isaac Walton League of America, and we're the largest chapter in Minnesota. And I'm basically was involved in water quality testing on the Minnesota River and Black Dog Lake for two or three years, working with Dick Dury. And Dick Dury is one of the co-founders of the Minnesota Valley National Wildlife Refuge. He's also a Isaac Walton League member, and he has been doing water quality testing for 41 years. The past 8 years has been on Black Dog Lake. And I'm just going to read something that he sent me. He said, I've been taking SEDRI disc readings on Minnesota lakes for 41 years and reporting the results to MPCA. About 8 years ago, I started taking SEDRI T-tube readings on the Minnesota River and the water that flows out of Black Dog Lake into the river. Right away, it was apparent that the lake water was dirtier than the river water on average. As best I can, I have checked the water that runs out of Burnsville into Black Dog Lake and it appears under non-rainy conditions, very little water comes into the lake from Burnsville. Most of the water in the lake that runs out is pumped out of the river, used to cool the XL power plant, and then expelled to the lake. There it cools down, spreads out, and runs back into the river. By then it is very dirty. Some of the worst SEGI tube readings I have taken show 5 to 6 centimeters clarity, which means you can only see down about 2 inches. And I've done water quality testing on the Minnesota River, and it's considerably better than that. And what he said is basically that the Mississippi has clarity readings of over 100 centimeters in some spots at some time. So one of the thoughts is that the Black Dog Lake is dirtier than the river, and we don't really understand why, and that's what the bill is about, is to do the monitoring necessary to do it. Just as a point of information, if you read the early white settler accounts of Black Dog Lake, it was valued by the Native Americans as the most biologically productive in the lower river valley and prized as a food source. The lake was part of a series of floodplain lakes stretching down to the river, and Black Dog Village was located by the lake, and it was known as a source of very good hunting and biological productivity.
Thank you, Mr. Crampton. I would like somebody from MPCA could come down. That would be great. Is anybody? Yeah, here we are. If you could let us know where you're at on this.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Glenn Scuda. I'm the Surface Water Monitoring Manager for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency.
Go ahead with your testimony. Welcome.
Thank you. Overall, I would say that, just to give some context, we are in the process of monitoring and assessing the lower Minnesota River watershed, of which Black Dog Lake is part of. We're also in the process of doing a larger assessment on the Minnesota River proper itself, the entire river. That work began last year and is continuing this year, and we'll be reporting out fully on the work, the data analysis, in about a year and a half. We did also do a study at the request or in response to concerns raised by the constituents in 2008, and our findings were that in certain cases the water downstream of the lake is in better condition than water upstream of the discharge of the lake, and sometimes it's in worse condition. So it's a variable condition, but we did not see a very significant difference between the water up and downstream of the discharge of Black Dog Lake itself. So we're in the process, as I said, of doing a larger watershed assessment. We're happy to continue to work with the constituents, as we have over the years, with Xcel Energy, with the information and data that they have, testing that they do on the lake, and to be able to report on that as part of the larger monitoring and assessment effort for the watershed and the river. Thank you.
So, Mr. Scuda, do I understand it correctly that you are willing to do what's requested in this bill and that you will do that?
Mr. Chair, we're happy to include it as part of our package, so to speak, for this watershed effort. So, yes, we can provide some form of assessment on the lake and the impact on the river.
Mr. Crampton, is that what you wanted to hear?
Yeah, I think it's very helpful, and I, you know, like I say, we've been testing the lake and the river for a long time, and we really want to know why it's dirtier than the river itself. So, yeah. Okay.
Well, let's begin with the assessment. Question, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to Mr. Scuda. Does MPCA or DNR have an ecological classification for Black Dog Lake?
Mr. Scuda.
Mr. Chair, Representative Purcell, that would have to be ascertained because this is, as far as we understand, a very shallow lake, and it may be more akin to a wetland than an actual lake, being sort of a backwater of the river itself. So that's part of the complication of what the assessment would actually be, but in any case, we could provide either a lake assessment, if it is a lake. Otherwise, we can provide a more qualitative wetland assessment, if that is more appropriate.
Just one.
Representative Purcell.
I assume there's fish in and out of this periodically. That's what I'm kind of get at, is what value ecologically does a lake have other than wetlands? Does it have a production, you know, fisheries? Is it a nursery for young of the year fish, etc.? Do we know that? If we don't know it, we don't know it. But
Mr. Scuda?
Mr. Chair, that we don't know at this point. I've been on the river in that area and seen the two discharge or connections between the lake and the river, and they're gated so that XL can control the discharge. So there's definitely some barriers between the lake and the river, which I'm sure has some impact. Again, it's a very shallow system. We could talk with the DNR on this as well. But I guess, part of the issue has been that the lake is not a public access type of a lake, which is one reason that we have not focused on it. We're trying to use our resources wisely. We focus more on the lakes that are publicly accessible and that type of public value.
Mr. Scuda, is this the area that some folks duck hunt? Is this that specific area? Do you know, or Mr. Crampton, do you know if this is open to the discharge of firearms? Is this where Herbeck used to go duck hunting? Thank you. Representative Lincheski said yes. I thought it was, but I wasn't 100%.
Well, she went with him, so I...
So that's kind of getting at Representative Purcell's point. What kind of lake is it? Okay, and it's private property. Still doesn't mean we should not be concerned about
my understanding.
Mr. Crampton,
yeah, my understanding is that, and I don't know what its classification is, but that historically it was a very productive natural lake, and not, it wasn't created by XL. It was there long before XL.
Thank you.
Or NSP.
Yeah. Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Besides the Isaac Walton League, has there been any other citizen or resident involvement, or is this pretty much coming from this one particular group?
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Neuberger. This isn't actually coming from the Isaac Walton League. Indeed, the constituent who's the most involved with this with me is in Florida, and Mr. Crampton is pinch hitting for him today. But it's actually quite a few Bloomington residents who just, we live on the Minnesota River. Governor Carlson, back in 1992, started this initiative to clean up the Minnesota River. It's been 20 years, and the river's dirtier than it was when Governor Carlson tried to get it cleaner. And we understand that sediment is a big issue. Feedlots are an issue upstream. There's lots of reasons that the Minnesota River has issues. But we also have Black Dog Lake just abutting Bloomington. And we're just, wanting to know what the water quality is there. I was happy to hear what the MPCA testifier said about trying to include more readings in the study that's taking place in that lower rivershed district. But it's actually Mr. Crampton. I called him and asked him to fill in for Mr. Dury today.
Thank you. Well, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lincheski, I'm curious, you said that it abuts up against Bloomington. Are there other communities, other jurisdictions that would be involved in this? I don't see any information from you with regards to the other, say the county commissioners, the city officials and so forth, supporting this request.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Fabian. The way to think about where this is located, I think it's technically in Dakota County. So, I know we don't understand each other's districts that well. I couldn't talk about yours very well, but just to give a little context. So Bloomington is one of 46 suburbs in Hennepin County. People often think of Hennepin County, if you don't live in it, as Minneapolis and a few other places. It's actually 46 cities in addition to Minneapolis, and Bloomington is one, and Bloomington is the most southwestern suburb of the county of Hennepin, and so our southern border is in fact the Minnesota River. The other side of the river is Dakota County, so Black Dog Lake sits between them in the Minnesota River channel, and there are many lakes throughout the Minnesota River channel. And they change over time as sediment and time and erosion moves along. So, the budding counties are Hennepin and Dakota, and the cities are Bloomington and Burnsville. But I don't think technically anybody owns that other than Xcel, the actual lake.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, yeah, we don't relate too well to each other. Mine is Manitoba, but anyway. If this were a standalone bill and you were going to move it to the floor, would there be a fiscal note with this? I mean, do you have any idea what the costs are going to be to the agency to take on this task?
Representative Lucheski, why don't we ask them to come down and confirm they can do this with no cost?
Okay, Mr. Chair, I just would, if I may, just add that I understand there is a fiscal note that's been requested but has not yet been produced. I attempted to draft it in a way that there would not be a cost. If you read it, again, it's a one-sentence bill that says, you know, test the water and post it to your website so you don't have to spend the money letting people know. And as I heard the testifier from MPCA, that they're studying the lower valley right now and they could add that as part of the project, but...
They're acknowledging, yes, so that's on the record.
Okay.
Any additional comments? Representative Lucheski, thank you for coming forward. We appreciate it.
And
the bill is laid over possible inclusion. Representative Lucheski, give us your final thoughts.
If I may, I want to thank Ms. Zipko, who really worked hard to get this all fit in into your schedule. I know you're at deadlines, and so I know your staff has done a great job helping other legislators get before your committee, and I want to thank you personally when I came and talked to you on the floor for hearing this bill, and finally to say that I'll take direction from you, Mr. Chair, as to how you wish to proceed, if this sort of language is necessary, or if you feel, as you put together your MPCA policy bill, that it can be addressed at a staff level. I would follow your lead on that. So thank you so much for your time, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lucheski, I'll leave it up to you. They've said they'll do it, but if you want the language in, we can put it in. I don't think it's necessary, but I'll talk to you again.
Thank you.
We'll be sure it gets done one way or another.
Thank you.
Let's see, next, Representative Joachim, I think you are here. We need to move your bill to taxes. Representative, I will move your bill to be passed and moved on to taxes. So, great. We needed more treats today, so that's. I'm glad you brought them. Thank you. Representative, welcome. If you want to present your bill. Members, I'm moving House File number 1704. To be moved on to taxes. It's a relatively small bill. Representative Joachim, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Members, I'm sorry if I'm adding to your sugar load today. I should have thought about that when I baked them last night. You should know they have peanut butter in them, though, if anybody's allergic. But is that, as per tradition, if a freshman comes before our committee for the first time, you're supposed to bring treats, I've heard. And I don't know how long that lasts, if it's your first bill or if it's every first committee you go to. So I would love to take direction on that as well. I want to thank you for moving House File 1704 for discussion. This is a bill that was brought to me by the Department of Natural Resources, and I have Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, here from the DNR to answer any technical questions, and also Rachel Hopper in the audience with Parks and Trails. And I would not want to upstage Representative Lucheski, but I think this is an even smaller bill. It adds the words parks and to a statute that's already in existence. So the bills would give communities a chance to apply to the DNR for grant funding to enhance where their local funding's falling short from the local trails and connections program. So it adds parks and to the local trails and connections program. As a former city council member from Hopkins, I understand the work and the concerns local communities have in trying to find money to update their local parks for either safety or accessibility or for other things that their citizens expect in their parks to have. There is some other opportunities for local parks to access grant funding, but they're usually geared towards regional parks. So local parks really do need another tool to help. The funding for the Local Trails Connections Grant Program is from the In Lieu of Lottery Proceedings. It's providing a local park funding source and is supported by the Legacy Advisory Committee, the DNR, the Met Council, and the Greater Minnesota Regional Park and Trails Commission. Demand for local park funding was identified in the State Comprehensive Outdoor Recreational Plan that was completed by the DNR. And as I said, I would really appreciate your support on this. It adds parks and, only two words, to the Local Trails and Connections Program that the DNR currently administers. So I stand for any questions.
Thank you. How about if we hear from Commissioner Meyer, and then we'll see if we have any questions at all. Commissioner Meyer, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. Representative Yoakum did a great job in explaining this bill. It, basically, what we're doing is expanding the lottery and loop program for parks, for trails, the local connection to parks as well. So, specifically, some applicants would put money in that had parks components to it. We would have to deny those. So, expanding this to be parks and trails is consistent with the other metropolitan parks and trails grants program and the state parks and trails funding as well. So, if you look at lines 2.18 and 2.21, it says that the money be only spent for state parks and trails. The metropolitan money can be only spent on metropolitan parks and trails grants, and now we're making this greater, the local parks funding eligible for parks and trails as well. So it's a pretty simple change, one that I believe all stakeholders support, and it just allows greater flexibility in the program.
And Commissioner Meyer, this actually was brought to you, was it from Parks and Trails Council, or was this your initiative? Originally, was it Parks and Trails Council?
Mr. Chairman, members, I think it just came up discussion with stakeholders in general that there should be greater flexibility within the program.
Okay. Any questions on the bill? Members, I renew my notion. Representative, I just want to thank you. Final comments?
I want to thank you. Like I said, as a former city council member, there's projects in our city that I can think of right now that would utilize this program and maybe making our passive parks more attractive for visitors and guests. So, I again thank you for your support.
I renew my motion that House File 1704 be passed to taxes. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay.
Thank you, members.
Let's see, next, Representative Dill, you want to do yours next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move House Bill 1649, and is this going to go to taxes, or is this going to be something you...
No, Representative Dill, I think it has to go to taxes.
Okay, very good. Well, members, first off, there's going to be quite a few Sustainable Forest Initiative Act bills running around and amendments and things like that, and so... this is one of them in a bill form, not an amendment. And what the bill does, the Sustainable Forest Initiative Act is a program that we hear here, but most of it, it lands in taxes because it's a large appropriation to help keep forests from fragmenting. Large landowners such as Blandon or Potlatch or Meriwether Trust, Mulpus, people like that own hundreds of thousands of acres, and we pay them an incentive to provide public access and to have forest management plans and to do a variety of things that benefit our state. It also includes a lot of small landowners, too, down into the 40-acre, 80-acre, 160 acres. So there's a lot of people that participate in this program, and number one is for the program is in the north, at least. I want you to think about this as you start to hear bills in the north. It when it comes to Sustainable Forest Initiative. In the north, almost everybody I know that lives in my county would know where to go hunting without going hunting on any land that has any Sustainable Forest Initiative connection, because they know where to go. But almost no one knows where to go that's from the metro or southern Minnesota up north, because they aren't familiar with it, right? But the benefit to us in the north of this program, so there's a benefit to the public on a statewide basis, but the benefit to the north is that land that is very large in size and tract, even smaller lands are important. The 160s and things like that are important to have good sustainable forest initiatives, so we keep our copy machines running here, paper mills running, and things like that. So we got benefit across the board. What this does is very simply, people come along and they have their land in SFIA. That's the acronym for Sustainable Forest Initiative Act. And they desire to put a conservation easement on top of the land. And what this bill does, it's very complicated to withdraw your land from the program. There's a lot of rules and regulations involved in this, and penalties and different things like that. What this allows is if a landowner desires to put a conservation easement, and almost all of the action is in the last part of the bill, starting on a line at 2.3. It says that notwithstanding the commissioner, meaning the Department of Natural Resources Commissioner, shall allow early withdrawal without penalty. Remember I said there's a lot of conditions on these Sustainable Forest Initiative Act contracts. on a land that receives a permanent easement that's more restrictive as a covenant than the SFIA covenant. In that case, the eligible easement acquisition, in the case of that eligible easement acquisition, the commissioner shall execute in the knowledge of document releasing the land from the previous SFIA covenant. So it allows for a mechanism for someone to actually come in and put a permanent conservation easement on the land, not take a penalty, and be able to do it readily without jumping through all the hoops that are in the previous part of the existing law. Long story to get to. And you're going to hear a bunch of these because there's all kinds of little problems that are creeping up. As an example, the Mesaba Trail, which you've heard about up in the north, the paved bike trail, walking trail, snowmobile trail, ATV trail, they are going to be going across 240s of land that are a very large landowner owns, but it does not, the SFIA does not allow for a paved trail across the SFIA land. And so there's going to be an amendment tonight in Representative Hackbar's committee that I'll be offering that allows for that specific use in the case of a public trail. And so there's all these things as programs go forward in the future, there's all these things that come out that weren't necessarily unintended consequences. It just wasn't imagined at the time the bill was originally passed. So stand for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Questions for Representative Dill. Any questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Representative McNamara. I just, your last comment, Representative Dill, reminded me of something that we're facing in related to a state trail in Kasota Township, where I believe it's the same situation. My point being that some of these easements are limiting some progress with some trails throughout the state. So there's value in some flexibility here.
Any additional questions? Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dill, I had a fellow contact me up in Cass County. I just was curious, and I sent him your bill, and I said, does this resolve the issue? And I haven't heard back yet. I'm just curious if he got with you, a fellow named Ballanton.
Representative Dill.
Representative Purcell, Chair McNamara. No, I have not heard from him. This is very narrowly drafted just for conservation easement. I'm finding as these bills start to become more public, these ancillary bills to the program, people are coming out with even more situations that make sense to me, that are good uses of public of land that is reserved for the public through a program. And I'm sure that as we go forward, you're going to see the stone rolling downhill and gathering a little more moss as we go. So, no, I have not heard from that constituent of yours, Representative Purcell.
Additional questions?
Just to follow up, I just want to express my support for the bill here as offered. It looks to me like it's going to resolve some issues that I've been hearing in my district on this.
Seeing no additional questions, Representative Dill, do you want to renew your motion?
Yes, Representative McNamara, I'd like to renew that 1649 be passed and referred to taxes.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The bill is passed. Members, we're going to recess to sing happy birthday and eat the cake. We're waiting for Representative Hansen, is not here yet. He's got the last bill. So we're going to take probably about a 10 or 15 minute recess to eat the cake. Appreciate members the flexibility there. Representative Hansen, you may have gotten caught in the same traffic jam Elena and I were in earlier this morning, or no?
There's a lot of green in town.
Well, there was an incident on the bridge. I'm not sure what it was, but it had it all backed up. Representative Hansen, your bill, if you want to
move for possible inclusion?
Correct. Representative Hansen moves House File 1349 for possible inclusion. Representative Hansen, if you want to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1349, I worked with Janelle in getting this drafted, and then we gave it to the Board of Water and Soil Resources to look at, and they had some suggestions. It's a short bill, but I think provides a path for not only establishing buffers on drainage ditches, but also updating drainage. I think in earlier committee meetings we've talked about the history and the complexities of drainage and also everywhere around the state. And over the last 10 years, the legislature and the executive branch have been on a journey relating to drainage. and buffers. In 2006, we had a report about buffer compliance. In 2007, I believe we gave direction to the Board of Water and Soil Resources to have every drainage authority and soil and water district have web pages and do checking and reporting on compliance with these buffers. In addition, we provided some money for updating drainage records. If you think back, and I think back to the farm where I grew up and the drainage ditch that goes through the peat ground behind our farm, there always used to be a ditch guy, right, Representative Torkelson? There was a ditch guy that came out and knew the ditch and probably was there, and the ditches were established almost 100 years ago, and in the 1920s and 30s. And the maps of those drainage ditches were often on paper. In some counties, those maps have been flooded. Some counties, those maps have been destroyed through fire. And we put some money in to digitize and update those maps. We put some money in over the years to update the drainage manual, and that process is going on. But a redetermination of benefits, in addition to resulting in a one-rod buffer, and the statute, in case you want to write this down where that occurs, is in 103E.021. Ditches must be planted with perennial vegetation. So 103E.021. But there's an added benefit besides the buffer, I think, for the landowner, and that's having an accurate assessment through that redetermination of what the drainage area that is flowing into that drainage ditch, that public drainage ditch, the area that is receiving a benefit for its value in having the drainage. We have, as a state, have provided about $20 million since Legacy passed, in LIDAR mapping, laser mapping of the topography. We've provided for county biological surveys. We've provided for digitizing the soil maps. We've provided for land cover mapping. So we have a lot of layers of data that is now available at soil and water districts, watershed districts, and counties that we've all provided for. Rather than relying on a paper map from 100 years ago, you can rely on the new and the current science that accurately reflects the topography and the drainage. So when you do a redetermination of benefits, you can get an accurate scientific analysis of that. Now, the folks who do that, we've talked about ditch inspectors in the past, and we've talked about ditch viewers. And I don't know if there's any viewers in the audience who want to testify, but there are very few viewers in the state. And when you look at lines 1.19 and 1.20, that is language that the Board of Water and Soil Resources recommended be included in this, because there really are very few viewers. And trying to have that expertise and try to use that technology to make sure that you could cover the state to get that work done, you may need to use some alternative methods. And that's something the Board of Water and Soil Resources could do. Why May 20th, 1977? That's when the law went into effect, saying that if there was a redetermination of benefits that occurred after that, there needed to be the one-rod buffer. And I just want to find a summary here, if you'll indulge me for a moment. So if we just continued with the way things are going, there's been a 20% completion of the public drainage ditches in 38 years. So in order to reach 100% of all the public drainage ditches, if we continue at our current rate, it'd be 152 more years. So 2167, I don't know if we'll be around to see that if we just encourage folks from happening. If we look at what, that's since 1977, that rate, but if we look at when we started focusing on this, Representative Dill, back in the mid-2000s, we went from 15 to 20%. So that 5% over 8 years to get us to 100% would be 128 years. So we've speeded up the time by focusing on this and trying to provide some of the tools. What my bill does is say that we need to get this done by 2020. I know that that's aggressive, but it's 5 years. Maybe there's more time that is needed for that. Maybe there's more time that's needed for Bowser and the drainage authorities to benchmark how they get this done. But I think without a deadline, this will not happen over a period of time. And why is that important? There are counties, and we've had testimony before about some counties and some drainage authorities have done this. Now, it's taken a while, but they've done it. So is it fair for a landowner or Minnesotans, if you have land in both counties and you've got one county who took the initiative and did this, and the adjoining county finds it impossible? Without that encouragement from the state to bring them up to do it, and again, we've provided them with the technical tools to do this, will they ever do it? I think we have to have that encouragement to make them, to ask them to complete this in a reasonable time so that landowners, wherever they are in the state, are being treated the same. That'll take time, but I think at the end of this, whatever that date is, we can be assured that we'd have accurate drainage assessments, benefits, and we would get, at a minimum, a one-rod buffer in. Now, I'll go with Freeborn County, where I grew up. When they did this, they went and they got the one-rod buffer in, but they also used that opportunity to sell to the landowners, well, maybe on this topography you need 50 feet or 100 feet, or maybe you have tile inlets that you could buffer. They worked with the landowner when they were doing the redetermination of benefits, to make the environmental protections fit that landowner, the voluntary components through CCRP or through some of the buffer programs that we've provided, either through general fund or through legacy. So there's an opportunity there for the landowner, when they're putting in the one rod, to be sold the voluntary practice that best fits their property. So that's the bill, Mr. Chair and members, and I know there are some testifiers. I don't know if the Board of Water and Soil Resources wants to provide any more details or not. Mr. Kane is here, and I would stand for a question.
Questions for Representative Hansen at this point before we have a few testifiers, and as Representative Hansen said, Mr. Kane is here available to answer questions on behalf of Bowser. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hansen. This is I just had a conversation just the other day with a farmer who's going through the redetermination. For him, he saw it was beneficial because it will make real what's happening today in terms of the benefits, who's benefiting in along the ditch, and it makes it modern and that sort of thing. So I think there's a lot of interest in this, and I know in my county, they are on schedule to do this, but it looks like it's going to take about 30 years to do that. And that feels like a long time to me as well, and I think for a lot of farmers who would want this. My question is about the alternative methods. Maybe it's you or someone else. Are these being used? How they're working? Are farmers satisfied? Are others satisfied? And that sort of thing. I think that would be helpful to us because I also understand what you're talking about with the challenge of getting the personnel to do this is a very real issue. That's not made up at all. So that may be an alternative. So what's the experience with it up to date?
Mr. Keene, was that question directed to you? Mr. Keene, if you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Al Kane. I serve as the Chief Engineer and Technical Services Section Manager for the Board of Water and Soil Resources. And I also facilitate the stakeholder drainage work group. So I would start with the fact that the alternative methods are to be developed, Representative. We have in the drainage work group talked about runoff-based assessment methods as an alternative. And in fact, based upon that interest at the drainage work group, Bowser had sought and received an LCCMR project to look at what was titled Conservation-Based Approach for Assessing Public Drainage Benefits. And that project, the University of Minnesota was hired to look at how other states do assessment of benefits for their publicly administered drainage systems. We looked at five states and one province to look at other methods. Turns out that the Minnesota method in our drainage law is probably the most rigorous. It's a mass appraisal-based method of trying to define benefits for properties that benefit from systems, parcel by parcel. And that determination is used both to look at benefit cost of projects and as a basis then for assessing lands for benefits of the drainage system. So at this time, that is the way that it's done, and viewers in the Minnesota system are the ones who do that. As has been discussed, there are a limited number of viewers in the state that has been an impediment for drainage authorities to accomplish redetermination of benefits. It's why I think there is significant desire to see if there is a more streamlined method to do redetermination of benefits so that they can be done faster, but still not losing the fairness, if you will, in trying to define who is paying how much for those systems.
Follow up, Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for that information, Mr. Kane. That's helpful. But my question is, if this is being developed, when do we anticipate it being developed to the point where not only can it be used, but I think the point here that's critical is that it be used in a way where the people who own the landowners are confident in its use. That confidence level is huge because there's this is obviously an area that can disputes arise, and everything from claims I get no benefit from this, I don't farm and I still pay, that sort of thing, to some contentious, and these are this can create contention in the neighborhood, and so we have to be confident with the system. When do you expect we could be confident with these alternative methods?
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. King,
members, the reality is that we don't have another method developed at this time. We've all been exploring that, trying to see if we can find a better method. So that's why in this bill, that direction, which hopefully would come with some funding to also focus on developing methodologies, alternative methodologies.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then my last question is, the alternative would be to get more viewers and to rebuild what you're saying is the most rigorous approach. Is there a way, has that been looked at? Can you outline any efforts that have been made to beef up the cadre of folks who can do it using the current methods?
Mr. Keene.
Mr. Chairman, members, the Minnesota River Board, when it was still around, had in fact tried to put some effort into that, and there was a training program developed at Ridgewater College out in Willmar to help develop more lead viewers, because you need a lead viewer who is willing to defend, if you will, their methodology if there are disputes about that, and there's a shortage of lead viewers. Their objective was to try to promote training that would help develop more lead viewers. There were a number of people who went through that, and I know that a few of them who, in fact, are now getting into the viewing business as a result of that. But I think the reality remains that there still is a shortage of lead viewers.
Next, we have Representative Clark.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering if, in looking at alternatives, you might have looked at the issue of using those little drones that farmers sometimes now hire someone to help lay out the land. And I'm just thinking, is that something that's being considered? It seems like it might be a positive use of those little drones. I'm just wondering.
Mr. Keene.
Mr. Chairman, members, I know that there is more and more technology being used by viewers. For example, online soil survey. They do use LIDAR, topographic data. They use other online sources of information that help them define the economic benefit and productivity of land with and without drainage. I can't tell you that any of them are using drones at this time, but I won't claim that I know all that's being done in that realm either.
Representative Clark, follow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know it was a gift given to us for our little farm. Someone gave us a gift of having a drone layover, and then we were able to use it to help lay out. We have 17 different parcels that we rotate through different crops. It was very helpful. And then, the accuracy was what impressed me. And I'm just thinking, Mr. Chairman, if we're so short of viewers, maybe it's a technology that could be suggested. I'm not pushing it. I don't know. I know there's other issues, but it's just something I... wondering if it might be a new occupation for some of the viewers or people that get drawn into it.
Thank you. Mr. King.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, note too in Representative Hansen's bill that the provision for developing alternative methods did include using current technology. We recognize that, in fact, as technology has improved, we need to be using that. And, in fact, viewers do. Maybe not to the full extent that it could be, but that is a place that we all want to go in trying to use the best available technology to make viewing as efficient as it can be.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of areas I'd like to explore briefly. First, when determining the benefits of these drainage systems, can you just kind of briefly explain why it's not just the surface contours that are the issue of determining benefits?
Mr. King.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I won't claim to be a viewer, but I'll give you what I think I can add to that or elucidate on that regard. Clearly, soils make a big difference and don't always reflect the contours of the land. So topography is a key part of it. Soils and productivity of that ground with and without drainage are clearly part of what drainage authorities, viewers use as part of their development of determination of benefits. But another thing that we have to keep in mind for subsurface drainage systems, tile, those can actually cross topographic watershed boundaries, be they sub-watershed boundaries or larger. So Those are factors that are involved in viewing that they have to look at. The location of land relative to the drainage systems is a significant factor as well, so their ability to use that system for an outlet. And in fact, how developed that is or could be are part of what viewers use in their analysis of benefits by parcel for land on those systems.
Follow up, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Keene. And I think it's also important to point out that it's not just the public ditch system that's involved here. There's also a lot of public-owned drainage, subsurface drainage. Would you elucidate on that a little bit?
Mr. Keene.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think you're trying to make sure everyone's aware that many of the public drainage systems publicly administered through Chapter 103E are in fact subsurface tile systems. So it's both open ditch and subsurface tile systems, both of which landowners then use as outlets for their private drainage as well.
Thank you.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Keene, for exploring that. The other issue that I'm very interested in is trying to encourage our systems to hold more water on the landscape. That's really not part of the benefit determination system now, but if we could somehow incorporate that into our systems where we would actually reward landowners who are interested in installing features on the landscape that would actually hold water back temporarily, keeping it, which has a multiple benefits. It reduces the high flows. It holds some water back, so suspended solids have a chance of dropping out of that water before it enters our systems, and also has a role to play in nutrient reduction. Can you talk a little about how that might be incorporated into a system that would benefit not only landowners but the land itself?
Mr. King.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, what you speak of is actually one of the motivations that the Drainage Work Group had for looking at runoff-based assessment of drainage benefits. And I mentioned earlier that I believe that we had, in fact, done a study. This is the study. It's available on the LCCMR website for looking at how could a runoff-based system for drainage system assessments work so that, in fact, land and landowners who reduce their runoff would see a benefit, a reduction, if you will, in assessment through that land use change. I think many of you maybe have heard me speak about multipurpose water management in the past. I'm a champion of that, and clearly temporary storage on the landscape is part of that, as well as the way that we use land that affects runoff as well. So the Drainage Work Group is clearly looking for a way to do that that is efficient but also effective and trustworthy, because I think, as was also mentioned, this system has to be reliable in terms of how it distributes benefits and associated assessments.
Follow-up.
Representative, well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for those comments. I would just add that this is a complicated area. There are great opportunities to make some improvements here, but just simply putting in a timeline is not really the whole answer, Mr. Chair, and I would like to, for us to explore other options to make this whole viewing system work better for all of us.
Well, thank you, and I think those are comments well made. Mr. King, can you just tell us, so in case there's some of the audience doesn't know, when you talk about the Drainage Work Group, who is that, what are they, what do they do, or Representative Harrison, either one of you, whoever wanted to just, or maybe making an assumption about that group, how well it's known and what it actually does do.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the Drainage Work Group was established after the there was a group put together relating to the buffer report in 06, and then it was codified after that in that law and has been in existence. It involves a variety of groups from ag, local government, and conservation organizations, the other state agencies. It meets probably at least four times a year. Mr. Kane is the facilitator for that group, and the legislature usually about every other year has had legislation that's come from that modifying the drainage law.
Thank you. That, appreciate that. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, how much of this delay in accomplishing this task is affected by understaffing at the department level?
Mr. King.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think that what is in this bill in looking at trying to define a directive to come up with alternative methods is, in fact, a reflection of we haven't been able to put all of the effort that it might take to come up with that into it, and therefore, if that is a priority to the legislature and the state, then that's something that additional focus, directive, and funding would help accomplish sooner than it otherwise would be able to be done.
Representative Hausman.
And Mr. Chair, I do always worry that whenever we hear about the length of time something is taking, we don't connect that with the fact that most often in recent years we've been looking where we can cut departments and how we can cut their budgets and so forth, and it does ultimately have some consequences. And to the author, your bill, in fact, does far more than just change the timeline. You actually say that the work group must establish alternative methods with current technology to more efficiently accomplish this task.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Hansen.
That's correct, and I believe a fiscal note has been requested that would help determine that, what that alternative methods would be.
And we have not gotten the fiscal note yet, but we'll have it before, because the bill is being laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Probably to Mr. Keene and to Representative Hansen. On line, you pointed out line 1.19 and 1.20. And you've got the book. I was trying to do some work there too. But I don't see any repealers or anything. So how does this language commingle with law as it currently states 103E.305, I believe, that requires the three viewers? And how do these two things relate to each other? You're not repealing that. And I like the idea of the flexibility and the establishing of some alternative methods. I think that's a good step. But
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, if you look above on 1.14, the Drainage Authority may appoint three viewers to redetermine. So that we're not changing that provision. What lines 1.18 through the end do is it directs that there will be alternative methods established that they could use. So it's not just the bread and butter that has been there for decades, but we would have alternative methods, and that would. And I want to go back to Representative Johnson. Water issues are very can be litigated quite a bit, and so having sound measures that are defensible through experience and science is very important. And so we're not repealing or saying that the old method doesn't work. We're directing the agency working with the drainage work group to develop alternative methods that would be defensible and sound using current technology and information.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that's been controversial in my area is the fact that within our ditch systems, DNR has determined that they receive no benefit. They get to establish, they get to do their own determination. Are we going to repeal parts of Section 84 then with this bill?
Mr. Keene?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, drainage law, as you indicate, in Chapter 84, which is applies to the consolidated conservation lands in northern Minnesota, rules that were developed in accordance with that or under that effectively override the methodology in 103E for those specific lands. And in my understanding of what Representative Hansen is trying to address here, he was not looking at trying to make a change to that. This is about what's in drainage law and then how that is used for systems which it applies.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But then to that point, we're potentially going to be holding private landowners to a higher standard than we are the state of Minnesota if the state gets to determine their own benefit, as I understand it.
Mr. King.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I don't know that I can very well address that issue in terms of the relationship between 84A and 103E in that regard, but I appreciate the question that you're asking in terms of is there any way that this would address that relationship or not.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Chair, just as a point, you know, I realize that we've had a lot of discussions about buffers and so forth. I think that you would have a much greater opportunity to get support from my part of the state if you do actually repeal parts of 84A and hold the state to the same standard and require that they pay their ditch taxes as assessed so that they have a stake in this stuff. This is a very contentious issue. I spent a half hour or more on the radio yesterday doing a live broadcast back home and on the KTRF radio station in Thief River Falls. This was the number one topic. Farmers have called me. They're very, very concerned. And when we point out the inequity that exists within the system on the Concon lands in particular that you mentioned, Mr. Keene, this is a very, very tough issue in my part of the state. And I don't think that we should be creating an escape valve for the state of Minnesota to not live up to their obligations. It's fine to talk about this, wanting to do it and so forth, but when you're expecting Pennington County, who has, I just got a call Representative Dill will be glad to hear this. I got Pennington County has 618 square miles, 13,930 people live in Pennington County. They have 470 miles of legal ditch system, according to the DNR. They figure that it would take about $2.4 million, according to their county board chair and their county engineer, to implement this program the way they interpret it in the bill. And then if you compare that to Marshall County, that has 1,813 square miles, which is triple the size of Pennington County, but they only have a population of 9,425 people. I don't know what the number of miles of legal ditch system that they have, but there's some very, very significant costs that are going to be associated with this. And Marshall County is made up, a lot of the state land that is there is the ConCon lands, and it's a very contentious issue. So as this moves forward, I would consider doing some support of some of these things if we repeal part of 84A. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments, Representative Fabian. We've got four different testifiers that would like to testify. So at this point, Mr. Peterson from Farmers Union, could you come down? And then Mr. Bowen, you'll be next. And then I've got Jennifer Burquam from AMC and Keith Carlson from MICA. Those are all the testifiers I have. Is there anybody else? Anybody else in the audience want to testify for or against the bill? Okay. Oh, and Mr. Harnack, okay. We've got you on the list, so I think we're okay time-wise. Mr. Peterson, welcome, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and trying to work with Representative Hansen on this bill and to keep it in the whole context of the whole discussion we're having on buffers. And this is the basic premise of this bill is something our membership's interested in. We've sent it out to our members. The first question wasn't about the redeterminations, but it was about what you've heard today, is that there's not enough viewers if we were to do something like this. So I think, you know, the piece about going back to the drainage work group, I go to the drainage work group as often as I can. And, you know, I think that is a really good idea to do that anyways, because we need to have more viewers. And so I think that's a good piece of the bill, and I hope you do consider that. And the average age of a viewer, too, is I think it's north of what the average age of a farmer is, so which is 58. So I'm just my anecdotal evidence. But I do think it's important, the discussion we're having. And then also the timeline is something else. You know, at 5 years probably isn't the, you know, would be difficult just based on what other counties have done and looking at it. It's in the ballpark, but hearing like Nicollet County is a 30-year timeline and other counties have a 10 or 20-year timeline, but I think it's an interesting concept to look at, and we would we want to continue to work with Representative Hansen as the bill stays here and as part of the whole discussion we're having on buffers. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Peterson? Seeing none. Next, we have Mr. Bowen. Welcome. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Ray Bowen. I'm here representing the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts. Let me begin by saying there are two different drainage authorities in the state of Minnesota. There are the 87 counties, and then there are a number of watershed districts that are also drainage authorities. I think we have around 20 or so, about half of them actually have drainage authority, and more seems like every year as the counties turn the ditches over to the watershed, the watersheds. First of all, I'd like to say we believe this is an idea whose time has come. I think the question is the devil in the details, obviously, figuring out how to best accomplish the redetermination effort. And we believe it's important because it will be much fairer to all landowners to bring the redetermination benefits up to date on ditches. Most ditches, the redetermination benefit, I think, is a rule of thumb. We consider 30 years. So I guess you could say every 30 years there probably should be a redetermination of benefits. That would be ideal, probably not practical. Our districts still use the traditional viewing methods, although we are starting to move towards technology. I just had a very interesting conversation with the Lac La Parle Yellow Bank Watershed District out in southwest Minnesota. and they just they're just in the process of completing a ditch redetermination of benefits, and they used ArcView GPS along with a combination of LIDAR and some other smaller programs to go in and figure out what the benefits were. And in addition to that, then they had to go out and do what they call ground truth, so they had to actually send people out, viewers out on the ground to make sure the culverts were in the right place or where we thought they were, and take an additional look at the topography and that sort of thing. One of the dilemmas with using the technology is that my concern is that that technology holds up in a legal setting, because eventually there's going to be a lawsuit. Someone's not going to like what we're charging them or what they're being assessed, and what the documentation you have has got to be able to stand up in court. So we may at some point, and once we figure this out, is to figure out how we tweak the law to ensure that the technology, the way we take advantage of technology is legal and in statute. The Lac-a-Parle Watershed District believes that they're going to reduce their time, the viewer's time, by about 75% by using the technology. They have not had any trouble. They've not had any protest about the proposed assessed benefits. So that's the first one that I heard of. I heard about it last week when we had some of our folks in town. So I think that's extremely enlightening. And they didn't seem to think it was that big a deal. They think it worked very well. The drainage work group has had many discussions and debate on these issues. I think we've debated the issue of benefits versus the assessed cost. You know, we use assessed cost when we don't do stormwater utilities, and that has actually worked pretty well. A lot of the watershed districts have sub-watersheds where they have stormwater utilities and they assess for issues within that sub-watershed, and you know, they don't come easy, because you got to convince the landowners that this is something that needs to be done. But once they're convinced, as they do the assessment, and don't ask me how they do that, because I don't really know. But I think some people believe that's a fairer way, and I think economists will tell you that cost causation, the people that are causing the cost, are the ones that ought to pay. So I think that's an issue that we really need to keep pursuing and looking at, because it may be a way, and I think Al Kane alluded to that. Our concern with this legislation is 5 years is very aggressive. I don't know if we have enough viewers to do it all in 5 years. Now, if we can capitalize on the technology, and if that works or seems to work, and if we get the statutes in place to allow us and give us the legal foundation we need, I think it's I think some of our districts could do it. Some of them probably couldn't, though, because it depends upon the number of ditches they have and the availability of the resources being the viewers and other technical people that work with us. We work very closely with a number of consultants when we do this, because they have the high-tech ability to do this. We have some in-house, but mostly we would rely on consultants. I think one of the things you may want to think about is perhaps asking all the ditch authorities to do an inventory of their ditches and when the last redetermination of benefits took place and what their schedule is on redetermination of benefits for the ditches within their authority. And I think that would maybe go a long way, at least to showing us the dimensions or the parameters of the problem or issues. And I think also give us a starting point. And I think that's another thing. Representative Hausman, you alluded to this. Al Kane is very humble, but he is totally overwhelmed about We're working on the manual right now, the public drainage manual, and we have everybody involved in that issue. I mean, everybody sitting at the table is involved to make sure that that manual properly reflects where we're at in Minnesota. And that manual does, I believe, address some of these issues as well. But he just needs more help. And I think if you want to get on this kind of fast track, or not fast track, this kind of track, you need to provide more resources to Bowser to work with us on it. And frankly, we've been meeting more than four times. We've been meeting, just seems like, just about every month. Now during session, it drops off. But we have been pretty aggressive. And not only that, I think there's five or six different subgroups that are meeting as well to address different issues. We have a public waters issues. We have an authority issue. We have the manual. So that's three I can, right off the top of my head, that are subgroups of the drainage work group. So we do have really good discussions, and frankly, it the drainage work group, I think, has worked out extremely well. I think that is the end of my comments. Oh, it cost is another issue. We need to get some handle on what this is all going to cost.
Thank you, Mr. Bowen. Seeing no questions, next, Jennifer Berquam. Ms. Berquam, if you could identify who you represent and give us your testimony. Thank you.
Bob. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Jennifer Berquam. I'm a policy analyst with the Association of Minnesota Counties, and we represent the 87 counties in Minnesota. Our interest in this bill, as Mr. Bowen said, is that we are one of two drainage authorities. We haven't had an opportunity to discuss this bill as an organization and take a formal position, but I have heard from a number of members that we very much support the redetermination process. A few concerns we have is just the timeline, and that's already been discussed by this committee. Timeline, resources available, viewers available to do the work, and we're concerned that we would not be able to comply with this law within 5 years. But with that said, we think this is a very good discussion to have at this time, and we're committed to working with the bill author, committee members, other stakeholders, and the drainage work group to continue to work on this. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Seeing no questions. Next, Mr. Carlson from MICA. Mr. Carlson, if you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm Keith Carlson. I'm executive director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association that consists of 10 of the regional center counties in greater Minnesota and 4 of the ring counties here in the suburban area. I do want to acknowledge Representative Hansen's leadership in this area and his efforts to bring attention to this issue. We think that's well deserved. That said, we do have substantial concerns about this bill. As has been, I think, brought out during the discussion here, to some extent we believe that this is somewhat putting the cart before the horse. As has been acknowledged here, the current process of determining damages and benefits under the current law is not changed under this bill, and that requires us to appoint 3 viewers, and what's not been really described is the extensive process that's gone through once those viewers are appointed to determine the benefits and damages, the notices that must go out, and the hearings that are required. Stearns County tells me on average it takes 2 to 3 years for the entire redetermination process to occur. And we have some counties, for example, Otter Tail County has more than 60 ditches that would fall under the provisions of this bill. I think the other thing that's not exactly clear through the discussion so far is that this will impose costs on the benefited landowners. The mere fact that viewers are appointed and make the redetermination incurs costs that will ultimately be assessed back on those landowners. To the extent that it's determined that buffers have to be established, those damages also have to be paid for, and again, will be those costs will be imposed back on the landowners. I think to some extent that we've been confusing the efforts of several counties, including Dakota, Homestead, and Otter Tail County, to enforce their shoreland 50-foot buffers with the ditch buffers. They're two completely different processes. Enforcement of the existing 50-foot buffers under the shoreland ordinances is a zoning process where you do not have to go through the viewer process. You do not have to go through the determination of benefits. It, frankly, is a less complicated and a less costly process. Although this bill, again, anticipates some alternative processes for doing it, again, it doesn't change it. We still have to go through the current process that determines what's basically the valuation increase in the benefited property from the drainage provided. I'll just mention one other thing, so it's put to rest. Existing case law says we cannot assess benefits on a flat rate, like a per lineal foot basis. We have to determine the benefits. With that, I'll conclude. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Seeing no questions, Mr. Harnack.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Ron Harnack, representing the watershed districts in the Red River Valley. We commend Representative Hansen for bringing this bill forward. We thank redetermination of benefits. Time has come, and it's a matter of the devil's in the details. How do we get there in an effective and efficient manner? Buffers is not the only reason that people go through redetermination of benefits. Significant in that is also change in land values and also the change in the amount of land that is feeding into a system that is providing an outlet for drainage. Well, oftentimes landowners petition for a redetermination of benefits because you've got upstream drainage that was not originally part of the drainage assessment, and the downstream landowners are suffering from the increased water and are not achieving the benefits that the original drainage system had provided for. So those are basically a couple additional reasons why a system would be redetermined. A couple concerns that have already been stated is that the time frame, I think, is woefully too short. We've got one watershed district that has 80 systems, and they've redetermined 15. I do believe that there is in place a alternative way to do drainage redeterminations using the technology that we have. And like L'Aquaparle has done, I think we need to have a little bit more experience with it. I think the drainage manual is going to detail how that can be done. I don't think there is a legal issue associated with it. I think it can provide a more science-based, a more transparent, and a better way to justify to landowners why they're having to pay a damage or being benefited. I think the idea of getting a handle on this, of doing an inventory of how many ditches have we got to do redeterminations on it, and what would be that cost, because there will be a significant cost in going through it. So, Mr. Chairman, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Harnack. Representative Hansen, you want to give closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing the bill. I think, you know, we use a lot of language about benefits and damages and redetermination, redefinition, alternative methods, but this is, I think you've heard two testifiers talk about this is the time to really dive into this. And yes, there are issues that need to be worked on. I look forward to working on those and would be happy to continue the discussion.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Hansen renews his motion that House file. I'm sorry, Representative Hackbart.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we're kind of glazing over the fact of the cost of this thing. We've heard some testimony here that this is going to cost some money, and I haven't seen how much money it's going to cost.
Representative Hackbart, we've requested a fiscal note, and it's not here yet. And before the bill comes back, we will have the fiscal note, and we'll know the implications of what the cost is, because as you point out, any discussion about this is premature without knowing what kind of money we're talking about. Representative Hackworth.
And where's the bill going now, Mr. Chairman?
Well, it's being laid over, Representative Hackworth. Representative Hanson renews his motion that House File 1349 be laid over. Members, tomorrow we have Representative Drazkowski's bill that dives into the discussion of land purchases in LCCMR and putting aside money for in a fund for complementing counties and local taxing authorities on the lost income from that land coming off the tax roll. Members, we're adjourned.